A small regular lecture. So in this class of condensed matter physics, we mainly concern about a many-body system. So a many-body system basically is a particle, say, with an n-particle system. It's described by a Hamiltonian operator, which will have a total kinetic energy term and the total potential energy term. And the state is given by this wave function of n variables. So this is what we try to do. We want to diagonalize this Hamiltonian, find the eigenstate in this form. But certainly, the way I write it, this is too hard, and no one can do it. So what you try to do here is not really solving this problem. We try to find some tricks. We try to turn this very complicated quantum system into a classical system and solve this classical system, then try to gain information about this quantum system. So basically, this is what we try to do. We want to solve a quantum system. We cannot do it. So we find a way to turn that into a classical system and solve the classical system, and then from the classical system to get information of quantum system, like a ground state energy and the energy level of excitations, things like that. So before I really do this semi-classical approach, so I will first try to review some classical system. And so what is the most important concept in classical system actually is concept of state. So the state is a information we have for the system, such that this information at this time t would determine the state in the future, or would determine the information in the future. For example, for the one particle system, the state simply is x and the velocity. And the point is that the x and the v at time, say, t equal to 0, would determine the x and the v at time t, any later time. So that's basically the definition of a state. So from this definition, we see that the equation of motion is linear in time, because initial condition of this given the total evolution, so it must be linear. So here we have x dot equal to v, and v dot equal to, say, partial. So in the potential. So for particle in the potential v, so we get this equation motion. Okay. So those are very simple. But now I raise a question. Is this enough? So the question is that knowing the state, say, given by x and v, and knowing the equation motion, do we have a complete knowledge, a complete description of classical system? So this became a little bit philosophical. I mean, what do you mean by complete? You know, if you know equation motion, you know the future, you know everything. Yeah. So, but here, I have to really go a little bit beyond classical theory. We know that classical theory is not a complete description of the system, not correct one, at least. It is quantum theory gave us a correct description of the system. So here I would like to ask, knowing the state and the equation motion, do we have enough information or knowledge of the system so that we can formulate a quantum theory, a quantum description? Yes, that's right. No, your answer is right. It cannot. So that's a we can do that. So what is missing?
when you get a quantization of the signature,
so we need to know the, what is the momentum, what is the coordinate. So, but then there's the issue, what is the momentum with the coordinate? You say, oh, coordinate is x, momentum is m times v. Well, that's more or less correct for the particle. But here I'm talking about the more general setup. For the generic classic system, labeled by some parameters we call states, how do we identify what combination parameter is momentum, what combination of coordinate? So what really is momentum, what is really coordinate? So here I want to say like one thing is that equation motion is not enough. To complete specified class system in a way I just described, we need energy or the Hamiltonian. So these two together would do the job. So that is the point. For this particular system, the Hamiltonian is just 1 over m v squared plus vx. Okay. And why these two together would do the job? So we know the answer, so I will just give the answer. So instead of using xv, we're using the xp to describe a state, which is equal to xm times v. Okay. Then the Hamiltonian will be 1/2 m, sorry, p squared over m plus vx. And then the equation motion would have this as a canonical form. That's the x dot equal to partial x partial p, p dot equal to minus partial h partial x. Okay. So this is the key. Somehow, if I choose x and p as our description or label of a classical states, then the equation motion and the total energy of the system have a nice relation. That is, the equation motion can be obtained from the total energy of the system in this canonical so-called Hamiltonian form. Okay, so this essentially define what is a coordinate, what is a momentum. Yes? In this case, they are the same.
Okay. Yeah.
But here, let me just describe a little bit of a non-trivial example. Okay. So, but here the message is the following. The message is that equation motion is not enough. We need more information. Equation motion plus energy is enough. In this example, we see that why it's enough. Because if you know the energy in this form, and then this gives us enough information to relabel the state using x and p, and such that this particular energy of Hamiltonian would give us this equation motion in this canonical form. So if you find such a x and p, then we call x the coordinate p's momentum. Certainly you can make other choice. For example, the xv certainly is another way to label states. But if you're using xv to label states and using this kind of energy expression, the equation motion for xv cannot be written in this canonical form. It's different. It's not like a v dot equal to partial h partial x. It's not that. Okay. So the lesson we learned from here is that once we know the equation motion and the Hamiltonian, there is a certain choice of coordinates, such that the equation motion can be put in this canonical form. And for such choice of coordinate, we have determination. What is the momentum? What is the coordinates? And then the then we can go to quantization procedure by saying that this x and the p equal to ih bar. Turn this x into the operator, and the p also into the operator, and using this to quantize, so-called to quantize the theory. So that is the point. Let me just give you an example to see what they try to say. So let's consider a particle in magnetic field. So the equation motion simply is x dot double dot equal to partial this I v. Maybe it's just this. Okay. So this basically describes a charge one particle moving in the magnetic field. So this is the potential force. This is the Lorentz force. It's a V cross B term. Okay. So then we ask the following thing. What is the coordinate? What's the momentum? We should follow the recipe here to solve this problem. Okay. First, let's try to write this into the first order differential equation. So equation motion in the first order form is simply that x dot I equal to vi, and vi dot just this partial vj dk. So now this is the same differential equation, but in the first order form. So that really means the state is actually given by xi and vi. So this sixth number gives us states, because the equation motion written in terms of the sixth number have a first order form. And so therefore, the initial condition on this would determine the total time evolution history. Okay. And the Hamiltonian, or the energy, is also given by the function of x and v. It's a 1/2 m vi square plus vxi. So this is the Hamiltonian. So in this particular form, it became a problem. What is the coordinate? What is the momentum? And certainly we try that. Maybe you can say, okay, maybe the xi still the coordinate, and maybe the momentum is just equal to m times vi. So that's a one natural guess. You can guess that. And the problem is that if you guess this, and then using this Hamiltonian, and using this Hamiltonian equation, this Hamiltonian equation just don't reproduce the desired equation motion. Is that won't work. And so one way to see it doesn't work is that the Hamiltonian somehow do not even contain the magnetic field. If you assume this, the equation motion of potential is just a particle moving in the potential V. No Lorentz force for some reason. Okay. So this really brings my message out. That is however, using this Hamiltonian and this equation motion, can we obtain coordinate and momentum? What is the coordinate? What is the momentum? Can we obtain that from these two? From the information with that. Okay. So the answer is yes. So let me just do it. So the key is that we want to find some combination of this x and v, so that in a new variable, we have this canonical. This equation motion can be reproduced in a canonical way. Okay. And actually, I do not have a way to derive what combination gave us momentum and the coordinates. And here, I just and since I know the answer, so I just give you the answer and check this answer happening right. A guess answer. You can say I make a guess, and then try to check this guess happened to be right. One of the reasons we cannot derive because the answer is not unique. There's many answers, so you cannot simply derive a single answer. But so here, we just guess one answer. Let's see, it's okay. So once the thing we want to guess is this one, but with a modification. And the modification is I will just add a function. Okay. So this is our guess. And then we try to see that if I'm using this pair as our labeling of the states, then can we derive, can we show that this equation motion have this canonical form? Yes?
Is it intended that the functions AI can only depend on the matching component of X?
Oh no, this is a function of X and X two, X three. So this is not that notation standard.
So I'm a little confused. Before you started the example, you said that we can specify a system if we have its equations of motion and the Hamiltonian.
Yes.
That will allow us to choose these canonical coordinates.
Exactly.
So here we are given the equations of motion. Do we have the Hamiltonian here?
Yeah. Here. I'm sorry. It's basically it's a mv squared plus potential.
Okay.
So this is Hamiltonian. Mm-hmm. And so we try to say that equation motion and the Hamiltonian allow us to determine what is the canonic coordinate on the momentum. Okay, so from here we find that so the okay. We find that the x star. So this is the v. Okay, and so the vi is equal to just trimming this. It's a pi minus ai over n. Okay, so this is the vi. So from here we see that the Hamiltonian is simply equal to 1/2 over pi minus ai squared over m plus vx. Let's just say v. V is a function of x. Okay, so this is a Hamiltonian. And then we try to show that the xi dot is so let's assume okay. So if you assume x and p are canonical momentum and coordinate the pairs, the equation motion will be given by partial pi and p dot, which is plus minus That's it. So here, what we need to check is that we need to check this equation motion is equivalent to this equation motion. Okay. If we make a right choice, you know, if this choice happens to be right, then this equation motion would reproduce this equation motion. If this choice is wrong, then it won't reproduce that. Then we have to make another choice until we find a proper choice such that this equation motion can reproduce that. Yes? No, I don't know the algorithm. That's a, one thing is pretty non-trivial because the answer is not unique.
Right.
Yeah. So the algorithm may produce one answer of, yeah, they need to specify gauge fixing, which. So the checking is not difficult. Say for this particular case, we just do this. We find this is equal to 1 over n ai minus ai. So that's what x dot is. And the p dot is just part of x. And then we have this term as a minus partial iv. Okay. But however, in this term, the a also contains x. A also contains x. So because a contains x, so we have this plus pi minus pj minus aj. Okay, let's using this pj aj over m. And a partial I A J. Okay. Yeah, this is that is how notations are arranged. So we get this we get this equation. And then we have to show that this equation is equivalent to this equation. But actually we'll check, you know, this equation actually produces this standard Newton's equation. Okay. And that's not so hard to check because this xi double dot, we just make a time derivative on this part. Okay. And that's give us that's equal to this pi dot minus partial I a is a partial j a I x j dot over m. Okay. So that's just make a time derivative here. We have here and here. Then we can using this. Then we can use this equation again to replace the pi dot by this expression and the x dot by this expression. Okay. Oh no, we don't replace x dot by that. We'll keep the x dot term. But we'll replace pi dot by this expression. We want to remove the p. So after that, let me just write down the final answer. We get this m inverse partial vi and plus x dot j partial I aj minus partial j ai. Let me explain where this term comes from. What you did, you just replace this pi dot by this equation. And so we see that this, okay. So this pi dot contain a partial v here. So So that's partial V over there, so you get partial V here. Also, PID also contain this okay. Yeah, then this combination actually is xj dot. Okay. Also contain this xj dot times partial I aj. Okay. So but there's another partial j ai times xi dot, xj dot. So we have a two term of this form, but the index is slightly rearranged. So that's it. So that's you get. So that's how you get this equation motion. Okay. So actually, this term comes from here, and but the first term really comes from here. That's it. Now from here we see clearly that if this equal to if this equal to this partial I epsilon I j k e k, if this part equal to magnetic field like that, then we will reproduce this equation motion. That's it. Okay. So that's essentially complete our story. That is, for this particle in magnetic field, if we have equation motion, we have an energy. We can indeed find the canonical pair for coordinate and the momentum. And then there's but with a requirement that there's a function and the magnetic field are related in a way such that this function happens to be a vector potential. If you choose this function to be a vector potential that produces magnetic field, then this expression would give us the canonical coordinate. Okay. So that's why the canonical coordinate is a little bit strange for the particle in magnetic field. We somehow we need this vector potential. Okay, yes.
But if you have a magnetic monopole, so you cannot write the magnetic field as the curve of some vector potential?
This is a very, very good question. And so let me post on this question. I'm going to discuss the next topic, and that will really answer your question.
I was just wondering what's the significance of the canonical momentum in this, physical significance in this?
So that's the thing. I don't know the significance within classical physics, but the significance will be appear when you try to quantize classical physics, when you try to go beyond canonical physics. So that's why I call this a little bit philosophical. What do you mean by complete description of classical physics? Here I mean complete description, I mean we are able to quantize the theory. So therefore identify this X and P and this Hamiltonian will be very important. Because once you know X and P as a canonical momentum pair, a canonical pair, and the Hamiltonian have this form. Then we say X, in quantization, X goes to this X, but the P goes to this I over H bar partial X. And once we plug this into here, we get a quantum description of the corresponding classical system. So this is important. Because I want to go between classical physics and quantum physics back and forth. So this discussion would be useful. Okay. And so now let's try to address the question I just mentioned. And Maybe before that, I want to say the following. But let me develop this kind of a thought a little bit further. Okay. So here I emphasize that a complete description of classical physics, a so-called complete description, requires a quick motion and tectonics. So having two-piece information is kind of inconvenient. And we also have can we combine the two-piece information into one? The answer is yes. That is a Hamiltonian formulation. Or Lagrangian formulation, sorry. It's a Lagrangian formulation. So let's consider a Lagrangian description of a particle in magnetic field, but in two dimensions. Okay. So let's consider the following quick motion. Again, this is quick motion. Similar one, but in 2D. So let me rewrite it again. So now here is I and J run only 1 and 2. And here, I, J, K, and Z run from 1, 2, 3. So just consider magnetic field, quantity of magnetic field in two dimensions. So the Lagrangian for this is given by this 1 half x dot square minus Vx. But this is not enough. We need another term. Ai x dot I. So this Lagrangian actually produces this equation motion. Because using this stationary path, the Lagrangian and this stationary path formulation, we find that the equation motion is given by this partial L partial X dot equal to partial L partial X I dot. Okay. So this is a equation motion. So I will not really try to derive this. It's pretty simple. You just plug this Hamiltonian into here. You'll get this equation motion. It's pretty straightforward. I will not do it here. I will not write it down here. However, there is another formulation. This is called a coordinate space Lagrangian. But there is another formulation called the phase space Lagrangian. Let's call it. The phase space Lagrangian is x. Let me do this. Pi xi dot minus the Hamiltonian x and p. So again, I will not really to see. Actually, from the coordinate space Lagrangian, you can derive a phase space Lagrangian formulation. Again, I will not really repeat. This is a standard calculation in the analytic mechanics. But I just want to give you the answer. The answer for this, for our case, is this. Minus 1 half pi minus ai squared over m minus v. Okay. So basically, this Hamiltonian is what we just derived a moment ago. Yeah, this is just what we derived a moment ago. If you plug in here, actually, the phase-based Lagrangian also produce this equation motion. Okay. I want to use this to make some statement. Okay. Yeah.
What's the equation that governs the dynamics of the phase space? Is it that same Euler Lagrange equation, or it's
the same Euler Lagrange equation? So, but however, okay. Let me just write it down. Because the equation motion is derived is a stationary path. You know, so when you have Lagrangian, you have this action. Then you want to find a path such a variational action to zero.
That's the Euler equation.
And then but here the difference is that so here the path is just a x as a function of t. Here the path is a x and a t as function of t.
Okay,
so therefore, if you're using the phase space, then we have the same thing, b, dt, partial l, partial x dot I. But then we have this dt. Pi dot Pi. So those are phase space, sorry. Yeah, exactly. And these two actually gave us x dot equal to partial h partial Pi. Pi dot equal to minus partial h partial xi. Yeah. So actually, it is this equation gives here. I think this equation gives here. Because for this phase-based Lagrangian, the time-dependent part is pretty specific. This very specific form. Okay. So why do this? The reason I gave this example is I want to compare this example with a phase-based Lagrangian of a single particle. That is x is p, x dot minus a Hamiltonian of x and p. So this is standard phase space Lagrangian, just for the one-dimensional particle. And I present these results for the 2D particle, 2D E magnetic field. For 2D particle magnetic field, it's really trying to let's give us a new way to look at this. And so we can rewrite this as C1 dot minus H C1 C2. I simply say X and rename XP as C1 and C2. Okay. So once you write this phase space Lagrangian in this in the C1 C2, then the similarity between this phase space Lagrangian for 1D particle and the coordinate space Lagrangian for 2D particle in magnetic field became transparent. We simply need to take mass equal to zero limit. If you take mass equal to zero limit, this V is simply x, function x1, x2. Okay. So we see that this V play a role for H over there, some potential energy. And this term, which is a velocity coupled to the vector potential, is this term. So this term can be written as A1 cos C1 dot plus A2 cos C2 dots. Simply, we have this A2 equal to 0 and A1 equal to cos C2. Okay. And what is more important is that this choice of A1, A2 corresponds to a uniform magnetic field. Because this is here we discuss the uniform. Here is if you have some arbitrary vector potential, we can have a non-uniform magnetic field. But however, the phase-based Lagrangian, Lagrangian, have this the first term actually can be interpreted as a coupling to the uniform magnetic field in the phase space. Okay, so this is so that is what's so special about the Newton's theory for mechanics. Okay, the point is the following: that this standard Hamiltonian formulation is like this standard Hamiltonian formulation of Newton's dynamics. It's a correspond to a very special case that the phase-based Lagrangian have a so-called a uniform magnetic field in the phase space. Okay. Then that's led to an interesting thought. How about a non-uniform magnetic field in phase space? The idea is falling. Suppose we don't believe in Newton's dynamics. We say Newton's law is wrong. We want to say in which way is wrong. We say Newton's law assumes there is a uniform magnetic field in phase space. Maybe our universe is different. There's a tiny but non-uniform magnetic field in phase space. And Newton's law should be modified. I think you did some homework along that direction. So therefore, more generally, this first term, this Px dot term, should be replaced by this term. Some more general term. And so in that case, we may have a generalized Newton's law. And this situation actually appears. We know that in a material, say like in a semiconductor, we have an energy band. The electron have an energy band. We are going to discuss it. And then when the electron has a wave packet moving in some crystal, you know, we always we used to assume this wave packet in the crystal would satisfy the same Newton's law. We'll see that this statement is not correct. Inside the crystal, the semi-classical motion of a particle in a crystal is not described by this standard Newton's law. And sometimes require a generalized Newton's law, where this term has to be replaced with non-uniform magnetic field. So that's basically kind of answer your question. So when you have a monopole, and then it's moving in that direction, actually. We have a monopole. Then if A is not well-defined, then that's kind of You may have a non-uniform magnetic field in phase space. Yes?
Why would we expect you know, electrons in a semiconductor to follow Newton's law? I mean, we wouldn't, right?
It won't, actually.
Yeah, no, but why would we even expect it to? Are we trying to describe a quantum mechanical system through classical
mechanics? Because, exactly. So because when people say that, people didn't derive it. People just say it. They say, OK, we have an energy band, we have a dispersion relation. Then the near the bottom energy band, we have a quadratic dispersion relation, we have effective mass.
Right.
Once you get effective mass, people assume it's Newton's law. So there's an issue about how do you know it's Newton's law? Okay. So basically, we need to derive this Lagrangian. So if you know the quantum mechanics, you should be able to derive this Lagrangian and to see whether the Lagrangian describing the motion of particle in the semiconductor have uniform magnetic field in free space or non-uniform magnetic field in free space. So that, actually, this is a non-trivial question. And similarly, one can also check for someone who say, maybe our universe is in a vacuum, as you mentioned. Do we really have, for the electron moving in this vacuum, is that its dynamics really correspond to a uniform magnetic field in free space, or we may have a correction? So it is possible to have a correction. Okay, then I have a question. So this really led to a suggestion that suppose if you don't believe the current experiment, think maybe Newton's law is modified. Just like a Galileo transformation is modified, replaced by Lorentz transformation. So they say maybe Newton's law is modified. So one way to modify Newton's law to introduce some kind of non-uniform magnetic field in the phase space. You may make some assumption. And then to see whether such modification led to any experimental signature or not. And then you'll design experiments and to ask whether experimentalists can really find this actual correction, this deviation. If you do find this deviation, then that'll be really interesting. That you really say that the Newton's law is not really. It can be wrong.
So just a very side question is that this magnetic field in space, phase space, does it have anything to do with what mathematicians call a simplex form?
So there's a question. Actually, this becomes more delicate. So this really a symplectic form because equation motion do not directly depend on this A1, A2. Only depend on the curvature, you know. The A1, A2 is like a vector potential. If you derive equation motion for this, you'll find that only this combination is a B, which is a partial C1 A2 minus partial C2 A1. Only this combination appear in equation motion. Okay. So this B actually is this symplectic form. So that's also I call this a magnetic field in the phase space. So there's a point that if this magnetic field in phase space, say, is not uniform but never changing sign, never zero, you probably can choose a new coordinate in phase space to make it uniform. Yeah. But sometimes actually one of the examples I describe is as a it's quite interesting. There's a speed angular momentum. Suppose you have this dynamics angular momentum. The angular momentum actually is a vector on the sphere. That's similar to the question you have. So now when you think of the angular momentum is a unit vector. So the phase space is not even plane, it's a sphere. And then this magnetic field in phase space is actually like a monopole. Okay. And so in that case,
there's no way to have a coordinate system where you have a uniform magnetic field everywhere on the sphere. You can make it locally to have some standard form, but everywhere on the sphere is not possible. Okay.
Somehow.
Yeah. So this became so this again is this became an interesting question. That is so we usually think of phase space is a 2D plane or 4D plane. But we have a situation that the phase space is a closed manifold. When you have a closed manifold, then how to have the synthetic form of magnetic field on this closed manifold is a very interesting problem. Say on the sphere, for sphere case, give us angular momentum. And also now, since you bring up this monopole, and then there's an issue about the monopole flux quantized. So then suddenly find, yes, this the strength of this magnetic field probably cannot be arbitrary. It also should be quantized. But this is a totally quantum mechanical issue. So therefore, by viewing this phase-based Lagrangian as some kind of Lagrangian magnetic field, we have phase-based magnetic field would lead to a lot of thoughts and guess. So a lot of interesting issues. Okay. So I don't know when should I stop.
Probably it's a good point to stop.
Okay. Maybe before I stop here, let me just make another remark related to this. One may wonder why equation motion only depend on this combination. Yeah. So there's a very interesting issue. And so here I want to make a point that if we change AI, so here we have A1, A2. So this is the first time written as A1, A2 coupled to the C1 dot and C2 dot. We can make a so-called a gate transformation, say A1 AI equal to goes to AI but add a partial CI F. We just add this. Before we make this change, what happened to this term? We'll see, yeah, this term would, if you make this change for AI, then this term would acquire additional term. This additional term is a partial KC1 dot. Oh, sorry. Partial KC1 F times KC1 dot plus partial KC2 F KC2 dot. This is the additional term we obtain if we modify A by this extra term. Then this term would give us this additional contribution. If you examine this a little bit more closely, this term actually is a total time derivative. This combination happened to be df dt. And we know that if a Lagrangian is modified by a total time derivative, equation motion won't change. Okay. So therefore, this kind of change cannot modify the equation motion. So then we get the notion that equation motion are gauge invariant. So equation motion do indeed depend on A1, A2, but only in that combination that this combination do not depend on this kind of transformation. And this B happened to be the combination of A1, A2 do not depend on, is invariant under this kind of transformation. So that's why I say the equation motion only depend on this B. Yeah. And so therefore this kind of the equation motion or the physics do not depend on total time derivative in Lagrangian.
this property will be used very frequently. So in a the next lecture, so this is basically a review of classical physics, but somehow with the quantum physics in mind. So in the next lecture, we'll start with a quantum mechanical system, really try to derive its classical picture. So try to using a classical picture to study quantum mechanical system. We'll start with a very simple system, a harmonic oscillator, and then we'll go into a particle in a lattice, like in semiconductor, to derive this equation motion, or a phase-based Lagrangian. Yeah, okay.